Aloha and welcome to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. And now, experience the good life today.
Aloha from Honolulu, Hawaii. I'm Danny Yamashiro. Welcome to The Good Life. We are here to help unleash your God-given purpose. Winston Churchill said, "Healthy citizens are the greatest asset any country can have." Well, that statement comes with a real challenge, much of which is taken on by political leaders. You know, it takes a special kind of courage to be a politician. I mean, to deal with the economy, the budget and spending, healthcare, ethics, national security, environment and energy, education, social security, faith, family, I mean, the Second Amendment, rail. I mean, to be a politician in Hawaii, it takes a special kind of individual. We have one of Hawaii's top political leaders in studio with us today. And we here at the Good Life Hawaii Radio Show, we pause, you know, at the beginning of every show just to remind you that the purpose for this show is to bring you God's love and God's hope found in Jesus Christ. For you to know that whatever you're facing, whatever you're going through at this very moment, whatever is weighing down on your, sometimes those burdens just weigh down so heavy on our shoulders. They occupy so much of our minds and they just drain us. It could be relationships. It could be finances. It could be a health concern. That and so many other things. But to let you know that there is always hope found in the Lord. And He loves you and He knows you. And, well, this special program, I believe it will be a blessing to you. And so I'm glad that you are joining us today. Congressman Charles DeJoux represented Hawaii's first congressional district from 2010 to 2011. The first congressional district comprises the urban core of Honolulu from the eastern shores of Oahu to the western areas of Ewa and Kapolei and includes Mililani, Waikiki, and downtown. He was a member of the House Budget Committee and the House Armed Services Committee. Before entering the U.S. House, Congressman DeJoux served on the Honolulu City Council and in the Hawaii State House of Representatives, where he was minority floor leader. He is a major in the United States Army Reserve. He's a combat veteran who served with the U.S. Army in Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan during the surge of coalition forces in 2011 and 2012. He deployed with the 3rd Brigade Combat Team, 10th Mountain Infantry Division at Forward Operating Base Pasab in Kandahar Province. Congressman DeJoux's military decorations, why, they include the Combat Action Badge, the Army Commendation Medal. His parents immigrated from China and Thailand. The former congressman grew up in Hawaii and graduated from Punahou School. He earned degrees from the University of Pennsylvania in political science and economics from the prestigious Wharton School of Finance and Commerce. He received his Juris Doctor degree from the University of Southern California School of Law, and he's married to Stacy Kawasaki DeJoux. She graduated from Kalani High School and the University of Hawaii at Manoa. She's also an attorney, where she received her degree at the William S. Richardson School of Law. They have 3 children. Charles, welcome. Welcome to our show.
Danny, thank you very, very much. Thank you for having me on the show, and mahalo for that very kind introduction.
We always want to know here, where did you grow up?
Yeah. Well, putting in some more detail to your biography you just read of me, I grew up here in the islands, grew up in, on Oahu. I actually grew up on the windward side. As a child, grew up in Mauna Willi, where my parents settled. And then after I got married to my wonderful wife, Stacy, moved out to Ho'okai side, which is where I now live, and where my wife and I are raising our three kids.
Okay. Now, I look at you. You're an Asian man. Okay. Now, if I study a little bit about your background, okay, Chinese.
Yeah.
Right? So how did you get a French last name?
That's a good question. You know what? That's frequently not covered.
Bonjour, by the
news
monsieur.
Yes. It's not covered by the news media, but I have to say to you, it's one of the most common questions I get is Charles, you look Asian, you look Pake, but what the heck? How did you get this like Holly looking last name? Were you adopted or something? No. My dad was born and raised in China. He was raised in Hong Kong. My mother was born and raised in Bangkok, Thailand. Both of them immigrated here to the U.S. The story behind my last name: my grandfather actually got it. My last name is an immigration creation.
Okay.
My Chinese name is Zhu, which is normally written Z H O U Zhu. What happened was my grandfather was an engineer, and he worked in Shanghai, which is where my father's side of the family is from. Shanghai, back in the early part of the 20th century, was taken over by the foreign powers. It was a city was quartered, and each quarter of the city was governed by a different European power. There was a British quarter, an American, a Russian, and a French quarter. My ancestral home rested in the French quarter of Shanghai. My grandfather worked for a Frenchman who was fluent in French and Chinese but spoke no English. Sometime in the 1920s, my grandfather did a building design for a building that was going up in Hong Kong. And Hong Kong back then was a British colony. Everything had to be in English for the British regulators. And my grandfather submitted his design to a translator who put everything into English except left my grandfather's name in Chinese characters. And so my grandfather went to his French boss and said, "Boss, give me a name. Just let me put something down so, you know, I can submit it to the British." Well, his French boss, who didn't speak English, gave him the French name Dizhu, which sounds like my Chinese name Zhu. And I understand in French it is normally written D-E-J-O-U, Dizhu. That would have been the end of the story, except in 1949, the Communist Revolution occurs. My grandfather and father, who was then 9 years old, flee China as refugees. They get to Hong Kong, and the British ask my grandfather, "What's your name?" And my grandfather, who still at the time did not speak English, remembered from 20 years earlier this Frenchman giving him this name. And he writes down on his immigration papers, D-J-O-U, not knowing that, number one, it was French, and number two, he misspelled it. But there were so many refugees coming in after the revolution. The British looked at my grandfather and said, "You want to call yourself this? Go ahead and call yourself this." My father immigrated to the United States. I was born here, and voila. This is how you have this Pake kid talking to you, Danny, with this very funny-looking last name.
Who influenced you most in your growing up years?
You know, Danny, you know, certainly my parents, especially my mom. You know, my mom immigrated to our country from Thailand. She had the amazing opportunity to come to our country. When my mom came over to the States, you know, our nation was embroiled in a very difficult and trying period in Southeast Asia. With all of America's involvement in the Indochina area, my mom had an opportunity to come here and study in the United States. And the original plan was for her to come here, study, and then go back home and share with everybody what wonderful things Americans are doing in Southeast Asia. Of course, she met my dad, and I was born here, and the rest, so to speak, is history. So I think my mom and my dad had a big influence on me and growing up. If there's a mentor, though, I had a sort of outside of my immediate family, it actually was former Congresswoman Patricia Saiki. The very first race I ever got involved in, the first time I ever sort of volunteered, the first time I ever really did anything political, was in 1986. I was a sophomore sophomore in high school. Pat Saiki was then running for the U.S. Congress, and I volunteered for her campaign. And, you know, over the years, Pat and I I've always volunteered on her campaigns. She subsequently ran for the U.S. Senate and then governor and just always got involved. But Danny, what I want to share with you is that in 1986, I couldn't even vote. I mean, I was still a high school student, and I just did anything that the campaign wanted. One of the things, though, that I did in Pat Saiki's 1986 congressional campaign was I was a stamp licker. Back then, you still had to lick your stamps. Mm. And so I was the stamp licker for Pat Saiki's congressional campaign. And I was just that teenage kid who was willing to do anything for a congressional race. But one of the amazing things I think about our nation and about our community is, for me, I have had the awesome and amazing privilege that in 1986, I was this teenager who had to lick stamps in a congressional campaign for Hawaii's first congressional district. And 24 years later, I was able to go to Washington, D.C. and take an oath of office as the United States Congressman for that very same congressional seat that as a teenager I had volunteered for licking stamps. And, wow. You know, I don't think there's another nation on earth that says and can offer you those kind of opportunities.
You know, it really does speak of the greatness of our nation, mm-hmm. The opportunities that come, dreams that can come to somebody sometimes subconsciously, whether you realize it or not.
Yeah.
I mean, you're licking stamps.
Yeah.
But there, and you're at Punahou, and you're experiencing these unique opportunities, and you're a Chinese guy with a French last name.
Yeah,
you know?
that makes me local. I can prove to everybody I'm local.
Well, you know what happens is it just allows. That's the relatability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the connectability that you have, and now the dream and the continuation of the dream. Now, a career in politics. You mentioned your sophomore year. Were there things that were sort of began to bubble up inside you when you were even younger that had some kind of a yearning or drive or interest?
Yeah, you know. Well, Danny, I half joke, but sometimes I don't think it should be a joke at all. Is what I get involved in politics? You know, I half joke with folks that maybe, you know, I got dropped on the head when I was a child. Sometimes I question my sanity as to why I'm involved in politics here in Hawaii. But no, I think for myself in terms of how I got involved in politics, let me answer that in two parts. First, you know, why did I get interested in politics, and then why I decided to run for office for the very first time. You know, for me, getting involved and getting interested in politics initially, you know, I do think a lot of it comes from my parents, particularly my mom, who had this amazing privilege to come to the United States when our nation was embroiled in Southeast Asia and in the Indochina region. And my mom, after she became an American citizen, really viewed it as an amazing thing that our country affords the humblest of citizens the ability and the power to choose your own government. I mean, this is something that too many Americans take for granted, but something that is afforded to so few individuals in this world. And that my mom really believes in and infused in me a very strong belief in America and the ideals of the United States, and a belief in the American dream. And that part of that belief in the American dream is this wonderful privilege that our government shall only govern with the consent of the governed. And that concept, I think, is something that for me as a young child, I've always found wonderful, amazing, magical about it. And something that I've wanted to be a part of. Now, translating that into actually deciding to run for office, though, was a little bit of a different step. That involved my mentor, Patricia Saiki. As I had mentioned to you earlier, I'd volunteered for Pat's campaigns for the U.S. Congress. She, in 1990, ran for the U.S. Senate, losing to Daniel Akaka. And interestingly enough, that too is coming full circle. And I was involved in that 1990 campaign between Akaka and Pat Saiki. And that was the last time there was an open seat for the United States Senate in the state of Hawaii. And now here we see in 2012, that seat is again coming open again. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it was involved in Pat's 1994 unsuccessful run for governor. But Pat, though, she frequently complained throughout the years that I had volunteered for her that, you know, Hawaii suffers that we don't have a real true two-party democracy in our state, that democracy only really works when the people have choices. You know, if you look back in history, nominally, the Soviet Union had elections. Nominally, the Constitution of the Soviet Union looked in some ways very similar to the Constitution of the United States. The big difference between the Soviet Union and the United States is that in the United States, voters had a choice when they went to the polls. But in the Soviet Union, you only had one choice, and that was you could vote for the Communist Party or not. In Hawaii, I think one of the failures we have in our government is people don't have choices. All too often, there's so many races that go uncontested, or there isn't a serious candidate on the other side. And people oftentimes scratch their heads and wonder here in Hawaii, why don't things ever change? Why don't things ever become different or better? And, you know, frequently I'll turn back to you and say, hey, look, the reason it's not is because there's not any real elections. It's an insular, closed, old boy network that controls everything. So for me, what happened was is that after I had graduated from law school and I had already begun practicing law as an attorney, I practiced business law in downtown, and I was looking around in my community, and Pat Saiki said, well, you know, we need more elections, we need more competitive elections. And in the particular community that I was living in at the time, there would not have been a competitive election for the Hawaii State House. The individual who had filed would have won merely by filing the paperwork. And I felt, well, geez, that's wrong. That's not a democracy. Mm-hmm. That doesn't offer people choices. So in 1998, I decided I should put my money where my mouth is. And after volunteering for Pat Saiki for a number of years, I decided to go ahead and try it and say, hey, look, I think I can offer a choice to the people. And I put my name in and I ran. And I promptly lost. But I guess, Danny, because I have a bit of a thick skull and a thick head and I'm a slow learner, I tried again. And in the year 2000, I successfully was elected to the state house.
That speaks of a loss can tell a lot, mm-hmm. tell us a lot about a person. A loss can tell us a lot about ourselves, mm-hmm. and how we respond mm-hmm. to what may seem like a setback. It takes a certain kind of skill, I think, to be able to learn the wisdom of how to turn a setback mm-hmm. into a comeback. Mm-hmm. And you were certainly able to experience that. Your life has obviously so much breadth and depth and color and relatability mm-hmm. to it. We're going to take a quick break right now, but when we come back, I'd like to, you know, carry on.
Yeah,
like
sure. To hear this is great.
A little more about your story, how things developed. Mm-hmm. You also got involved with politics, but you're, you know, Punahou grad, lawyer, Wharton. But you joined the military.
Yeah.
You've been on the combat.
Yes.
You've been in combat, mm-hmm. been in the combat zone. You can relate with people mm-hmm. in the military, their families. But I think there's a conviction. Mm-hmm. There's a core. There's a heart and passion. When we come back from our break, I'd like for you to share a little bit more. And then also talk to us about your spiritual journey.
Yes. Yes, I'd very, very, very much like to chat about that here. Yeah, Danny, no, let's keep chatting. This is great.
When we come back from our break, you'll hear more from Charles DeJoux, Congressman Charles DeJoux, and his life, his hopes for the future of Hawaii. That includes you. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath the barren sky. Leave it to me, I'll lead you home.
Active lifestyles are promoted for healthy living. This involves exercise and a range of sporting activities. There are times, though, when injuries take place resulting from sports, work, or even the effects of age. In some cases, surgical care is necessary to facilitate proper healing. That's the time to call orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi, with offices at both Paliwomi and Kuakini. Dr. Calvin Oishi has treated patients with the compassion, care, and expertise second to none. Call orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi, 484-2042, 484-2042.
There was a time when filling up your gas tank was a full-service experience. The attendant would look under your hood, check your oil and water, check your tires, and wipe your windows, all while your tank's being filled. Burt's Union Service Station on School Street still does it. They also provide auto repair services with master mechanics to give your car the needed fixing to keep it going a long time so your dollars stretch with a lasting, smoothly running vehicle. Visit them today. Burt's Union on School Street.
One thought, one insight, one lesson can give you a winner's edge. Danny Yamashiro's new book, Winner's Edge, includes over 300 inspirational quotes and insights from his personal collection on leadership, relationships, hope, family, teamwork, love, and much more. Winner's Edge by Danny Yamashiro, available at bookstores throughout Hawaii. And don't forget Paradise Calls, Danny Yamashiro's remarkable story of God's miracle, saving him from falling 400 feet off the Pali Ridge, a story that's brought hope to thousands around the world. Winner's Edge and Paradise Calls by Danny Yamashiro, available in ebook at Amazon Kindle. And listen to Danny Yamashiro and his featured guests on the Good Life Hawaii Radio Show weekdays on 99.5 KGU FM at 2 p.m. and 12 midnight. Connect with Danny on Facebook and Twitter and find out more at DannyYamashiro.org.
Listening to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. Now, let's rejoin Danny and his special guest.
Charles DeJue. Well, he's been an active member of the community in Honolulu. He served on the board of directors of the American Lung Association, the neighborhood board for his area. He's a member of the Kamehameha Lions Club, and he's been a member of the Young Business Roundtable, the Rotary Club, and the Hawaii Telecommunications Association. He's a professor. He's taught at the University of Hawaii Richardson School of Law, the University of Hawaii West Oahu, and HPU, there, Hawaii Pacific University. I'm talking about Charles DeJue. And he's in studio today. You're listening to the Good Life Hawaii Radio Show. I'm Danny Yamashiro. And to find out more, maybe you're tuning in right now and you're saying, hey, I caught the last part of the, before you went to break, but how can I get the rest of the show? Is it possible? It's absolutely yes. Free downloads at thegoodlifehawaii.org. Thegoodlifehawaii.org. But not only that, I want to encourage you to take this and send it as a Facebook link, as an email link. Send it to a friend or family member that you just know would be blessed by hearing this. Again, thegoodlifehawaii.org. And to find out more about Charles DeJue, that's really easy. All you got to do is go to DeJue.com. DeJue.com. And remember now, he's got a French last name. So that's DJOU.com. DeJue.com. Take us back. Okay, so we're talking about your journey, mm-hmm. how that passion, that dream, the convictions grew for political leadership. Mm-hmm. Take us from there.
Well, Danny, after I got elected to the legislature in 2000, then I was very fortunate. I got elected to the Honolulu City Council in 2002, reelected in 2006, served on this council for 7 years. Until winning the special election for the U.S. Congress in the spring of 2010. Unfortunately, I was defeated for re-election that fall. And then I left Congress in January of 2011. And then after that, got mobilized. Mobilized in my capacity as an Army Reserve soldier. Served in Kandahar, Afghanistan. Come back and now running again. But one of the things just want to emphasize here, and thank you very much for all those accolades on my resume. But you know, the most important things to me in my life, you know, it's my family, it's my marriage, it's my faith. You know, mm-hmm. and that I think is far more profound than anything you do in politics.
What experiences really stood out in your deployment in Afghanistan?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things about serving overseas and serving in combat. You know, one of the things I want to begin just sharing with you, Danny, is how thankful I am for my wife and for my family. And I say this to not just all the veterans out there, but all the veterans' families and how much appreciation I now have. And for me, I really understand today that when our country mobilizes and sends a service member into harm's way, it is not just the service member who is shouldering the burden. Mm-hmm. It is their families, too. You know, my wife, if there's anyone who deserves a medal for my tour of duty, it's not me, it's my wife. You know, she was the one who had to watch the kids, hold down the fort at home, and hold down her job all by herself while I was deployed overseas. And I think, you know, all the spouses, all of the children of service members do not get recognized frequently enough. But in terms of your question, what stood out for me? What memories do I have in particular? Well, maybe I can share two with you. Well, I mean, there's so many. There's so many different stories I can share. You know, perhaps one is that I can share with you is you know, the first time I got shot at. It is a odd experience to have someone shoot at you, wanting you dead. I mean, you know, in common vernacular, people you always see in slang, "I want you dead," or, you know, "Gosh, you must have just died," or "I almost died," or something like that. People will say it in slang, but it's a profound experience to live through something where you confront somebody who sincerely wants to kill you and picks up a rifle, points it at you, and shoots you with it. It is, to say it's a profound experience really is amazing. I mean, and the thing about it here is when you're on the receiving end of a bullet, it's odd too, because it's a very quiet experience. What I mean by that here is I think for most people, you see guns and shooting on TV or in the movies and whatnot, and it sounds very loud. You know, and certainly, of course, having been in the Army Reserve for over 10 years, 11 years now, you know, I've shot weapons and whatnot here. But when you shoot the bullet, all the sound comes from the discharge of the bullet. If you're, you know, hundreds of meters away and you're on the receiving end of it here, when the bullet collides with something, it actually is fairly quiet. And the first time I was shot at, I was sitting in what the Army calls an MATV, which is basically an oversized truck. And it struck me, my gosh, someone's shooting at me. You had to sit there and pause and think, what the heck? Why did somebody want me dead? But it's a profound experience. But, you know, another experience I want to share with you, and I think this is something perhaps a lot of your listeners can relate to, was going to church in a combat zone. I was very fortunate that I was at a forward operating base that we did actually have a chapel, and we had a chaplain, and I did go to church on every Sunday. But when I say it's a church, it's not what anybody would think of as a normal church. It was a tent. It looked like any other tent where soldiers sleep. There was nothing special about it. There was nothing that set it apart from any other a tent facility made out of canvas on my forward operating base. Really, the only thing that distinguished it, that you knew it was a chapel, is the word chapel was spray painted on the front of the tent. I remember one of the very first times I went to church, and you know, my church, like I think many churches, it asks for prayer requests. And before I had deployed to Afghanistan, you know, I mean, like everybody else who's been to church, I've heard prayer requests for, you know, 101 different things out there. Prayer request for good surf on the weekend. Prayer request for, you know, hopefully you can find a new job. Prayer request that, you know, hey, you know, maybe that, you know, my office party that I'm planning goes real well or something like that. One of the first times I went to church, the chaplain asks for prayer requests, and several hands went up. And one of the first soldiers you know, ask for a prayer request, and it was a prayer request that he had been on patrol, and the soldier immediately in front of him had stepped on an IED, and an IED is an improvised explosive device, a landmine, and ripped off both of his friend's legs. And it was a prayer request to, one, thank God that he remembered his combat life-saving skills and was able to put a tourniquet on both of the legs of his buddy. And it was a prayer request that his buddy make it and survive. The next hand that went up was a prayer request, something somewhat similar. A soldier was driving a truck. The vehicle he was driving in hit an IED, threw the truck completely up in the air, 180 degrees, landed on its roof. And he and three other soldiers who were in the truck with him all walked out with nothing more than some bumps and bruises. And he offered a prayer request and thanks to the Lord that he had more time on this earth and that he was meant to, God's telling him he still has more to do. And then a third hand went up. This is all one meeting. And this is, and the third one was a hand went up, and the prayer request was that, you know, that his wife was 9 months pregnant. A soldier raised his hand. He said, you know, my wife's 9 months pregnant. And it's just a prayer request that he hopefully can have a little bit of time off, and that his sister-in-law was going to Skype in with an iPad 2. And that he was hoping that he could watch the birth of his first child on Skype over the internet. And that's what he was thankful for and what he was looking forward to. And so, Danny, you know, after I went to that chapel, prayer requests and statements of thanksgiving to the Lord, you know, took on a whole different level of meaning. When you're asking for and you're praying for, when you go through life experiences about life and death, and you're making decisions about killing and having to go through some very terrible times, it took on a whole level of gravity. And I remember that first chapel I went through, you know, the chaplain always ended the service, as they do here in Hawaii. I mean, you know, it's a prayer and a statement of thanksgiving and a statement that the chaplain hoped he would be able to see everybody next week. And, you know, here in Hawaii, or when people go to church, you know, when the pastor says, you know, I hope I see you all next week in church, you know, usually what the chaplain means is that, well, I hope the surf isn't too good. I hope, you know, the sail over at Ala Moana isn't that great, so all of you can make sure you can make it back to church next week. But when the chaplain would close for us at my forward operating base, when the chaplain would say, I hope I see you all next week, it wasn't a statement because that next week was good surf or there was a good sail on. Mm. There were more than several occasions when the chaplain would say, I pray all of you be safe for this next week, that the next week, all the parishioners who came, we'd be missing a few. And we'd be missing a few because some people got hurt. They went into some really sticky situations and didn't come back.
Charles, what you're saying, that the things that what you're saying, the way you're saying it, having been there, sobriety.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very, if your feet are not on the ground, figuratively speaking, I mean, just listening, the reality that our servicemen and women have lived through time more than can be expressed, more than will ever be realized for those of us who have never been there, which is a whole lot of people.
Yeah.
But we need to know. We need to hear the gravity of what it's like. You know, we're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, again, let's go deeper. Let's go further. I mean, I want to know, you know, how did the Bible take on deeper meaning during this period in your life? Mm-hmm. Even more so, you know, the spiritual journey. I mean, you're kind of giving some of it to us, but when we come back, tell us more. And then, of course, family.
Mm-hmm.
Family. Gosh, you're a political leader. You know, I mean, people are always asking you about policies and decisions and big questions. But gosh, Charles, the things that you're sharing, I mean, this is the stuff that life is made of on a very personal level. Now, let me just throw out a thank you to you real quick right now, because your openness is doing something in the heart of someone who's listening right now. So stay with us. We'll be back with more from Charles Dejeux.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath a barren sky, leave it to me, I'll lead you home.
A healthy smile can make all the difference, but where do you go for healthy teeth? Dr. Kerry Ishihara is a specialist in general dentistry in Wahiawa. With more than 20 years of experience, Dr. Ishihara serves the people of Wahiawa, including a special focus on military families. As a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army Reserves, he understands the needs of soldiers and families in our military community. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is proud to have Dr. Kerry Ishihara as an anchor sponsor. Call him at 621-8281. That's 621-8281.
Do you need a specialist in cosmetic dentistry? Someone who can bring the best in you from the inside out? Let Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa help you. His warmth, compassion, and expertise provides all the assurance needed for your dental needs. Visit Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa of Windward Family Dentistry in Kaneohe. Call him at 235-4525 to make an appointment today. That's 235-4525. Or visit jeffmiyazawa.com. Windward Family Dentistry, where a lifetime of smiles is created. Have you been blessed by the Good Life Hawaii Radio Show? Have the stories been an inspiration to you? What if you had the opportunity to improve the quality of another person's life, someone like your family member or friend? Danny Yamashiro is looking for friends of the Good Life to prayerfully consider a monthly financial gift. You will receive monthly letters from Danny that will equip and encourage you. I invite you to become a financial partner with Danny Yamashiro Ministries. With your gift, you will become part of Danny's ministry team and help reach more people with God's love and hope through Jesus Christ. Write your check to Danny Yamashiro Ministries and mail it to P.O. Box 700998 Kapolei, Hawaii 96709. That's Danny Yamashiro Ministries, P.O. Box 700998, Kapolei, Hawaii 96709. Or go to www.dannyyamashiro.org. Listening to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. Now, let's rejoin Danny and his special guests.
So how does a young boy, he grows up, he has a rare opportunity to have a incredible educational opportunity by going to Punahou School. But then there's the seedlings of a career that kind of trickle down as it percolates within his own heart. But who knew back then that he would become one of Hawaii's leading political figures? His name is Charles Dejeux. Of course, he became an attorney in between. He went into practice. He practiced law, married. Now he is married to Stacy. He has three children. He's been deployed to Afghanistan. He's experienced combat. And he's been sharing here in studio with us today. You're listening to the Good Life Hawaii Radio Show. This is a rare, exclusive interview with Charles, who's kind of giving us a behind-the-scenes look, view, a traveling together, as it were, with his life. To find out more about our show, to listen to this program in its entirety, go to thegoodlifehawaii.org. You can have download this podcast for free. And we have other resources there and other shows, other guests that I think would be a tremendous blessing to you as you listen, but also pass it on to others as well. And to find out more about Charles Dejoux, go to Dejoux.com. That's D-J-O-U.com, Dejoux.com. The Bible, mm-hmm. Charles. How did the Bible take on deeper meaning during this period in your life there when you were in the combat zone?
You know, Danny, let me back up a little bit first and give you a little bit of background, and then you know, I'd be happy to share with you sort of my experiences about the Bible and reading the Bible when I was deployed overseas. Let me start by saying that I have a very unique perspective about the war in Afghanistan. You see, I was a United States congressman first, and as a congressman, I voted in favor of Operation Enduring Freedom. I voted in favor of the funding of the war in Afghanistan. And then I became the first person ever to deploy to Iraq or Afghanistan after voting for funding it. In some ways, I guess I'm the first person for Iraq or Afghanistan to have voted myself into the war. There's a couple of members of Congress who had done it the other way around. They went to Iraq or Afghanistan first and then got elected to Congress. I'm the only one who did it the other way. You know, when I was in Congress, I was a member of the House Armed Services Committee. So I was privileged to have gotten to the highest level of briefings, talking to four-star generals about the status of the war and the strategic outlook of operations of our U.S. military. Then went to Kandahar. Then went with 3rd Brigade Combat Team and saw it from a whole different perspective. It was the same war. It was the same war that I had been a congressman and voted in favor of. And now, though, I was a soldier there, and that was a very different perspective of what you see on the ground as a soldier than I saw as a congressman on the Armed Services Committee.
Give us more.
Tell us. You know, it's one thing to talk about and hear about and theorize about what the Taliban are doing or what about, you know, America's strategic interests are and how we deploy American forces and where we're sending people. It's another thing to actually go put your group boots on the ground, you know, to step in that mud and to really be part of the front there to try and turn around that country and to beat back the radical Islamists in the Taliban and to try to end that terrible opium and heroin trade that goes on in southern Afghanistan. More specifically, you had asked me about what it was like with the Bible. You know, for me, Danny, part of me having come back now has, again, so much richer appreciation. And I think I appreciated the Bible and I appreciated doing my devotions and I appreciated it as a Christian who went to church regularly. But I don't think I really knew how powerful, how meaningful it was until I went through this deployment. And I say that in so many different ways. First off, you know, it was something for my wife and myself to connect with. You know, we were almost quite literally on opposite sides of the planet Earth from one another. But we both did our daily devotions together. And I knew even though I wasn't able to talk to my wife and my family daily, it was something that connected me still to my family, being able to know that my wife and I were reading the same passages on the same day together. And it was a means of us being able to still stay in touch with each other spiritually, even if we couldn't do it via telecommunications. But on a second level, it also meant a lot to me. And this is weird. And I guess it's an amazing thing of how God works. You know, I've said that I don't think I knew the meaning of peace until I went to war. I didn't really truly understand Christianity and Jesus Christ until I was sent to the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan. You know, and for me, again, if I can share with you in a story, I lived and worked and operated on a forward operating base in Kandahar province. My particular forward operating base was a joint base. It was part of what I favored as a congressman, and that is transferring more and more authority from the American forces to Afghan forces. So this particular forward operating base was jointly operated, and that is there were approximately 4,000 soldiers on my FOB. Of that 4,000, 1,500 were American, 2,500 were Afghan soldiers. And the Afghan soldiers, they were right there. I mean, their tents were right next to the American tents. But they basically took a corner or a section of our FOB. And, of course, they're all, by and large, Muslim. I remember one of my first weeks there, to get from where I worked, I was a detainee operations officer, where I had worked as a detainee ops officer, to the chapel required me to cut the fastest way was a shortcut, and the shortcut was right through the Afghan compound. And I know a lot of people sometimes here in Hawaii don't want to bring out their Bible or are a little, you know, hesitant about talking about their Christian faith, not that open about it. And I'll confess to you, Danny, I myself too. I mean, in politics, you know, you don't want to offend anybody. You always want to try out and get out votes. But I remember a Sunday, again, this is one of my first Sundays when I had been deployed and decided, well, you know, it's Sunday. I should go to church. I should go to chapel, and picked up my Bible and started walking over to the chapel. And it is, if you've ever felt awkward carrying a Bible in McDonald's or an Alamoana shopping center, or awkward about telling people that Sunday morning you're going to go to church when everybody else is going off surfing or watching, if it's the fall, NFL football or whatever. Mm-hmm. If you think that's awkward, I'll tell you, Danny, it is exceptionally awkward to be on a forward operating base in a combat zone carrying a loaded weapon, knowing that there's an enemy out there who wants to kill you, and then carrying that Bible, walking through the Afghan army compound where everyone around you is Islamic, and carrying a Bible through that compound to go to chapel. And, you know, I think for me the easy thing would be, not to do it. It's just so much more convenient not to have to do that. But, I think I found in a weird, odd, amazing way a sense of peace in doing that, that I think God sort of spoke to me and communicated to me, not just in church, but in the mere simple act of holding a Bible when you're at war and walking with that Bible through a compound of individuals who don't necessarily... I shouldn't say didn't necessarily, who have a very hostile view to Christianity. And so I think I've come back from that experience, that when I sometimes hear of individuals who are reluctant to share their Christian faith or reluctant to talk about their faith because they're in McDonald's and they're worried about offending somebody, I think I come back with a much richer sense that if you're worried about, you know, doing your devotions in McDonald's because you might offend somebody, where do you try to do devotions in an Islamic republic with people who will literally kill you if they found you with a Bible out there? It's a very, very different experience. And for me, one that I think has made me a richer person. It has made me understand my faith and connect with my faith so much more deeply than I did before I went. And, you know, Danny, let me also just share with you that, you know, after I lost my election, my re-election campaign for the U.S. Congress, you know, it was a devastating experience for myself and my family. I mean, I think anyone who's ever lost the job, you know, it's a tough thing to go through. But it is even tougher to lose your job in front of 1.2 million people on live TV. It's not a fun experience to go through. And I think, you know, I went back, and it's tough not to take an election campaign defeat personally. And I asked God, you know, why? You know, what happened? I mean, I didn't do anything wrong. There was no scandal. I paid my taxes. There's no, you know, starlet in the closet or anything, so to speak, here. You know, and I worked extremely hard. Why is it that I lost my job? Why did I lose my re-election campaign? And then to get mobilization orders, to be away from my family for a tour of duty, to go into combat, I also asked God why. I mean, good gosh. I felt sort of in some ways God was piling on, not just after having lost my election, but now I got to be away from my family and I got to go into a pretty sticky situation. And I questioned that. But I think, you know, God works in mysterious ways. And I know that people say that over and over again. But for myself personally, I think that was something I was meant to go through. You know, I think going my election defeat and my experience in Afghanistan was something that God wanted to explain, show, and share with me. And, you know, I'm not telling any of your listeners, you got to go to Afghanistan and go into combat and get shot at in order to have a real, true, profound experience with the Lord. But for myself, at least, yeah, I think it turned me from being a Christian who went to church and somebody who just, you know, probably went through the nominal motions of my faith to somebody who really today, I think, has a far deeper, richer, and more profound understanding of what faith is and what faith means. And you know, and if I could just show also something real quick, you know, while I was over there, you know, I picked up the Bible and read this passage from Hebrews 11:1, that faith is confidence in your hopes and assurances of the unknown. And that passage that I read in Afghanistan has really struck and stayed with me. And I think it is an amazing statement, I think, about what faith really means. And I am struck why more people don't have faith. I don't know how I would today get through life and through the trials and through the struggles of life without faith. For me, it is just such it's the rock. It's the foundation of what helps me get through things day to day. And I don't know what the future holds, Danny. You know, the next 80 days are going to be very difficult for me, for my family. It's going to be a lot of work between now and the general election on November 6th. But I have faith. I have that assurance of the unknown and confidence in my hopes. And if I didn't have that, I don't know how I'd get through this. I don't know how I would get through this season.
A crossroads that has galvanized you in your life. Share about your family. Stacy, your kids.
Yeah, Danny, you know, my wife, my kids are everything to me. You know, my wife and I just celebrated our 12th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you. No, actually, if anything, you got to congratulate my wife for sticking it out with me for that long.
Congratulations, Stacy.
She's the one who's really had to tough it out with me. You know, I really can't imagine my life without my wife, Stacy. I can't imagine my life without my kids. Bringing it back to, again, my own situation as an elected official, as a former congressman, you know, and now having come back from Afghanistan, I think things have crystallized a lot easier for me. You know, politicians, liberal or conservative, Republican or Democrat, I know oftentimes get very much caught up in the latest current event. They're always talking about, you know, what's going on with the latest maneuver in Congress, what's going on with the latest amendment to the tax bill, getting involved, you know, what latest gaffe the president or vice president or whomever may have said. And it's very easy to get lost in the weeds of it all. For myself, my family, and this is especially the case since coming back from Afghanistan, has really helped me focus on what's important in this life. And for me, I today now know far better that the most important thing in my life, it's not being a good politician. It's being a good husband and a good dad. And that's all I do, and I'm not able to win another seat in elected office in the state of Hawaii. I'm okay with that because that's what's important. It's not important to worry about the latest, you know, amendment to the most latest continuing resolution pending on the House floor. It's important to know, what my wife and my kids are doing and make sure that everything's steady and okay with my wife and my kids and my family. And that's helped. That's what I've been able to focus in on. And actually, you know, and Danny, I could also just quickly add here, you know, that is something also that I've been a little concerned about with politics in Hawaii, politics generally, but politics specifically in Hawaii. You know, I am the thing that is most important to me is not that I'm graduate from Ivy League University, not, you know, even necessarily that I'm a combat veteran, not, you know, my experience in the legislature or the city council. You know, it's that I'm a dad. That's important to me. And you look at our politics today in Hawaii, politics nationally, it's become so all-consuming, so total. So few politicians have families. So very, very few. I mean, indeed, one of the most profound things for me is this election, this year in 2012, if you look at all of the major candidates running for major office, all of them, I pick any one of them here, I'm the only candidate who has kids who are in school. I mean, having children and worrying about dropping your kids off on time is such a commonplace experience for so many individuals. It's part of my life and my experience, but it is something that no other politician running for office this year experiences. And I think that's unfortunate. Something's wrong with that. Something's wrong with our government here, that when we have all of our elected officials, none of them have school-aged children. And a good chunk of them don't have children, period. And I think our government misses something from that. And when we say and we wonder, you know, why doesn't our education system get better? Why aren't families valued as much by our government? Well, perhaps that has a little bit to do with it.
Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about your family values. We've got just about a minute to go. What do you look forward to if elected? Mm-hmm. What can we look forward to? Hawaii look forward to? What's in your heart if you get elected?
You know, what I look forward to doing is being a good representative for the people of Hawaii, not for my political party. I am troubled that all too often what I see with our current representative, what I see with our current Congress, is so much of an interest in scoring quick, cheap political points, getting a quick soundbite in, throwing barbs one way or another so you can get on the 24/7 news cycle. And not enough heart, not enough caring about our next generation. Too much of a short-term focus, not enough of a focus of, geez, what does this really mean? Not for next month or next quarter or next election, but what are the consequences of this policy mean for our children and our grandchildren? And if I'm fortunate and blessed enough to earn elective office again, it will be a unwavering commitment that every morning, every day, I have that privilege to hold that office, to get up and ask, what can I do to make this world just a little bit better place for my kids and yours? And, you know, that's one of the great things about our country, is that I've been afforded this privilege to have been able to serve in the past, and that I can run for office and hopefully still contribute again in the future. And I look forward to that. And, you know, Danny, I look forward to the people's judgment on Election Day on November 6th.
You know, this has been a real rare, exclusive, very special, tenderhearted moment. Thank you, Charles, for being a guest on our show and sharing your heart as you have.
Danny, thank you very, very much. Thank you for doing this show. Thank you very much for inviting me. This has been a good experience, you know, and it's something I really, really, I mean this sincerely, I've enjoyed this. Normally, I'm talking about the latest fight in Congress or in Washington, D.C., but it's a nice change to talk about family and talk about faith instead of just having to talk about politics.
In the next few days, you're going to hear inspirational stories of hope and faith, more for you. And there's no better time than right now to share the love of Jesus Christ with someone near you. I want you to invite them to listen in at 2 p.m., 12 midnight every day, or check us out at thegoodlifehawaii.org. Share these programs with friends, family. Proverbs 2:6 says, "For the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth come knowledge and understanding." It's always a blessing to be with you. A special thank you to our guest today, Charles Dijou. Find out more at dijou.com. Until next time, along with my technical producer, Chaz Ontai, I'm Danny Yamashiro. Remember, the Lord is with you. Let him unleash your God-given purpose today.
Thank you for listening in on today's broadcast of The Good Life. with host Danny Yamashiro. We hope that today's program has been a blessing for you. The Good Life Radio program is listener-supported, and we'd like to encourage you to pray about becoming a sponsor or donor. Your support makes it possible for us to continue to minister to God's people through The Good Life. To become a sponsor or to make a donation, please visit thegoodlifehawaii.org. That's thegoodlifehawaii.org, and may God richly bless you with The Good Life.